In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. The health effects of wildfires and other climate change events are becoming more clear. Smoke inhalation from fires, as we said just a moment ago, can affect respiratory health. Studies are also showing an elevated risk of heart attacks for people with heart disease, and we know that high temperatures, like the heat dome that enveloped British Columbia a few years ago, can be fatal. But what about the neurological impacts of climate change? How are conditions like MS, Alzheimer's, or epilepsy affected by our changing world? This emerging area of study is referred to as climatological neuroepidemiology. Birchin Ickits is a neuroscientist, founder and director of EcoNeuro. It's a research initiative that looks at climate change and neuroscience. She's also the chair of the International Neuroclimate Working Group. Birchin, hello.
Hello. Hi, Matt.
Explain this term to me. What is climatological neuroepidemiology?
Certainly. It is a mouthful term, isn't it?
It certainly is.
It is a new interdisciplinary field that works at the nexus of climate and environmental science, epidemiology, neuroscience, and psychology. The goal of the field is to understand how climate change impacts our brains, including our neurological and mental well-being. For many years, as scientists, we stayed in our departmental silos and worked in isolation in our labs or in the field or on our computers. But only in the last couple of years, we realized that if we don't work and talk with each other, we're not going to be able to answer this question of what climate change does to our brains.
Do we know? I mean, we're just talking about the lungs, about the heart, but how much is actually known about the impact of climate change on the brain?
Yeah, there's much less evidence on our brains for sure, and there's much less awareness of it. So climate change impacts human health through a variety of direct and indirect factors. You had mentioned wildfires, air pollution, extreme heat. There's also the spread of vector-borne diseases, food scarcity, and all of these affect our brains. And there are more studies that are coming up every day about this in this field. So we know, for example, that you had given earlier in the show about the examples of the wildfires, that there's a study that came out, for example, a couple of years ago from University of California, San Diego, looking at the residents of City of Paradise in California who had gone through a campfire in 2018, which was considered the deadliest and most destructive wildfire in California's history. They had not only looked at the mental well-being of these residents after this really traumatic climate event, but they also did a variety of cognitive tests and EEG measurements. And they had found that these residents not only showed increased risk of developing these mental disorders, depression, anxiety, PTSD, but they also showed significant impairments in cognitive function and brain activity. And so this was the first study that had shown that these climate traumatic events can also affect our cognition, our memory, and other brain functions as well.
I was reading something about this, and people were connecting the dots between what you have laid out and how just being in hot environments affects our cognitive function. And talking about, for example, what happens with kids in classrooms. If the classroom doesn't have air conditioning and the temperature's off the charts, that the kids perform poorly on tests compared to children who might be in a more climate-controlled environment. Draw that link for me in terms of what's happening there, you know, how we react when we're in hot conditions, and how you might see that playing out through the lens of climate change.
Yes, absolutely. So our brains has an optimal temperature and environment it functions the best in. And anything that deviates from that, it causes stress on the brain, not only acutely, but long-term as well. So then the nerve cells start going through stress, and it causes inflammation occurring in the nerve cells. It increases oxidative stress, even at points some mitochondrial dysfunction. And so the brain starts working not for really complex tasks such as tests or even decision making, because they did similar studies on immigration judges who have to make these really complex decisions around who to accept as an immigrant or not, and many other different groups of people, workers who really have to do complex tasks. They had found that because brain is working so hard to maintain its functionality, that it hinders their ability to be able to do these complex tasks.
So you're looking particularly at the neurodegenerative effects of climate change. What in particular are you most concerned about?
Yes. What I'm concerned about is that all these exposures we're going through, it could be air pollution. The studies show that air pollution increases the risks of Alzheimer's, extreme heat shows it increases the incidence of stroke and multiple sclerosis. So what really concerns me is that, not right now acutely, but in the long term, our brains are these incredibly adaptive organs, and they can mask damage really well. And we see this in the neurodegenerative disease field. An individual goes through a traumatic brain incident, or they are exposed to a certain neurotoxin that is really harmful to their brain. And then years pass, and sometimes decades pass, and they start developing these neurological symptoms that really affects their daily life. So they go to see a neurologist because they're having these memory lapses that are really interfering with their daily life, or they cannot button their shirts anymore. And then they get diagnosed with Alzheimer's or motor neuron disease. But by that time, it's actually really late in the disease process, because the disease has been going around for 10 years, 20 years, but it's been masked. And so now I feel like we're living this real life experiment, where we put our brains in this petri dish and exposing it all the increasing amounts of heat and pollutants and toxins due to climate change. And we don't know what's happening to it, and we're retaining functionality. So we're not thinking much about it, but maybe 10, 20 years from now, it will start showing we'll start seeing these neurodegenerative diseases at much higher rates and at earlier ages.
We're going to talk about epilepsy in just a moment, but can you just briefly explain the connection between extreme heat and, for example, something like Alzheimer's?
Yes, absolutely. So extreme heat causes stress and inflammation in the brain. And epidemiologists had found that these, even being exposed to a short amount of really, but consecutively, these high heat events can increase the risk of developing Alzheimer's.
That's fascinating and kind of terrifying, too.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to bring in another voice into this conversation, Sanjay Sisodia, who is a professor of neurology at the University College London with the Queen Square Institute of Neurology, also director of genomics at the Epilepsy Society, founder of Epilepsy Climate Change, which is a group focused on the impact of climate change on epilepsy. Sanjay, hello to you.
Hello.
What do we know about the link, such as it may be, between climate change, extreme weather events, and epilepsy?
So we're beginning to learn more and more about this and seeing early signals that there will be many impacts of climate change for people with epilepsy. We know quite a lot about how the brain works and how that working is disrupted in people with epilepsy. And we have good reason to think that as climate change takes place and as heat waves occur, then the functioning of the brain will be further disrupted. We know, for example, that important elements in the way the brain works are very sensitive to the surrounding temperature. And as that temperature rises, then we can expect that functioning of those parts of the brain will be even more affected, not just by the disease process, but by the surrounding temperature.
What is it about epilepsy specifically that would make people susceptible to extreme weather events like heat waves?
So many factors, actually. And just as an example, many people with epilepsy are sensitive to the amount of sleep they have. So if sleep is disrupted, then they may well have more seizures that night or the following day, for example. And we know, it's our common experience, I think, that during heat waves, elevated nighttime temperatures are really difficult to cope with. We all will probably find it difficult to sleep when the nighttime temperature doesn't drop. And if you then also, of course, have epilepsy, then you could imagine how that would provoke more seizures to occur then or in the subsequent days.
What about, I was reading about this, I was reading more about this, and one of the things that came up was vector-borne infections, things like mosquitoes, and the increase in the prevalence of things like mosquitoes because of a changing climate. What is that, how does that factor into this?
Yes, so what we've just been talking about is how climate change and heat waves, for example, might make things worse for people who already have epilepsy. But we also know that as the world warms up, the ranges of vectors that carry infectious diseases will spread. And many of these infectious diseases can be associated with seizures at the time of the acute infection or can lead subsequently to the development of epilepsy. So as diseases spread, then we can forecast that there will be a spread and an increase in the number of people who have epilepsy as a result of these conditions.
You said that you expect the inequalities of epilepsy to be exacerbated by climate change.
I think that's right. We know that epilepsy carries with it many problems, and it can generate and exacerbate pre-existing inequalities. If we then add to that climate change, then it's easy to see how actually that could make things even worse. So, for example, if you have epilepsy and you have some consequences from that, for example, you may not be able to afford air conditioning, then when there's a heat wave, you will be at an additional disadvantage compared to somebody who maybe is able to use and access air conditioning.
How novel is this research? I mean, in the conversations that we are having around climate change, are people talking about this at all, really?
Well, not enough, I think. I think there's plenty of reason for us to be concerned about this and to be thinking about what we can do to protect the health of people with neurological diseases such as epilepsy. But there, I think, needs to be more discussion about this, more awareness about this, more information for doctors to provide people with epilepsy and more discussion with people with epilepsy. And actually, once you start talking to people with epilepsy about these issues, you learn that actually many people are already aware of the issues. Patients themselves are aware of the issues and are taking action themselves.
Because they're living through those swings in the climate. They're living through those dramatic changes.
Absolutely. And they may not talk about it with their healthcare professionals. I had, for example, the mother of a patient with a severe epilepsy say, yes, when we have heat waves, we pull all the curtains, we shut the windows facing the sun, we stay inside to avoid the heat. But we don't talk with you about it, doctor, because what can you do about the weather? So people don't actually talk about it, even though it's already affecting them.
Bertrand, you are, as I mentioned, the International Neuroclimate Working Group Chair. And this group is going to have its first meeting this month on Earth Day. What do you want to come out of that meeting in the context of what we're talking about?
Yes, absolutely. So this is a group that includes neuroscientists, epidemiologists, public policy experts. We have some foundations that are interested. And there are three things that we really want to come out of. One is that we are aware that there needs to be more evidence, more research, and more funding for this research to happen so that we know more about how the brain is impacted. The second is we need more awareness, public awareness. So how can we really talk about this? And this is a your show right now is a great way to be able to do that. We need to experts to be talking more about this issue than everybody else. And the third is that we need to, from what we know, we have to start informing public policies and bring about training primary care practitioners to really talking and coming up with some ways to prevent further damage happening.
I was going to say, what can we do now about this in the face of a changing climate? You can talk about changing public policy. That can take a long time. What can be done right now?
Yes, some of the things we can do right now in the medical field, for example, is to be able to, on the days that that there's heat waves or we know extreme weather events happening, we can provide more mental health support. We can do early screenings for to assess whether people, especially in the frontline communities that are impacted more about from climate change, to see if there's any early signs of neurological or mental disorders starting to happening. We can have in the emergency departments, we know that on the days of the heat or extreme weather events, there's much more admittance of people with MS or mental disorders. And so we can have a neurologist on call to make sure that they're aware that there will be a lot more patients coming in that day. Mm. So there's a variety of different things we can do.
Sanjay, right, just in the last couple of minutes that we have, is your sense that healthcare systems around the world are at all prepared to deal with this?
It's a very good question. And I would say that certainly from the neurological perspective, I don't think they are. I don't think there's sufficient awareness of the impacts of climate change and particularly heat waves, for example, on people with neurological diseases. And we know that a significant proportion of the excess deaths related to heat waves, for example, in France in 2003, were associated with neurological diseases. So there's a real need for greater preparedness for healthcare systems and greater information provided to people with neurological diseases so they can too prepare and take measures themselves.
You just wonder whether people are willing to engage with that. It feels like one more, it could feel like one more overwhelming element of climate change.
I think that's true, but I think that it's happening around us, and it's not really an option. It's not a case of healthcare or climate change. It's not a question of scientific endeavor or attention to climate change. It's a question of healthcare and scientific endeavor in the context of climate change.
This is so interesting. Part of a conversation around climate change that I have never really heard before. Thank you both for telling us something new. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Birchin Ikats is a neuroscientist and chair of the International Neuroclimate Working Group. Sanjay Sisodia is a professor of neurology at University College London and the founder of Epilepsy Climate Change.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.